You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club. Hi there, welcome to the show, bringing you the latest news and sharpest insight from around the racing world. It is Thursday, November the 12th. It's a lovely sunny autumn morning here in TW11 and lots to pack in to the next half an hour or so. Later, I will be hearing from Coolmore's Tom Magner about the plans to fight coal mine developments in the Hunter Valley in New South Wales, the fifth time such a fight has been undertaken in the last 10 years. I'll be hearing from Sheikh Salman in Bahrain about the £500,000 Bahrain Trophy, which is set to take place a week tomorrow and has attracted a huge field from Europe, including household names such as Lord Glitters and Sovereign and Global Giant. We'll also be talking, of course, once again about the three-day Paddy Power meeting at Cheltenham, which begins tomorrow with that wonderful clash between Easy's Land and Tiger Roll in the cross-country race. The man trying to spoil their party is trainer Christian Williams, and he will be speaking to me about the chances of his Welsh Grand National winner, not to mention virtual Grand National winner, Potter's Corner. But first of all, I welcome in podcast regular Rishi Prasad to the show. And Rishi himself has been much in the news in the last 24 hours because yesterday Sky Sports Racing published an interview that Rishi had undertaken with their host, Josh Appiafi, as part of Josh's series Leading the Way, profiling racial diversity in horse racing. Rishi opined, not particularly controversially, you wouldn't imagine, that racing was behind the times on racial diversity and cited a lack of mobility amongst the training ranks. Now, subsequent to that, he has experienced significant pushback, some of it pretty unpleasant, on social media and elsewhere, and he joins me this morning to discuss. Rishi, how surprised have you been by some of the negativity, extreme negativity, that you've had to deal with in the last 24 hours?
Nick, I'm extremely surprised. I'm still surprised now at how much vitriol some of the responses to the interview and to the things that I've said has been forthcoming. I must admit, I have got that badly wrong. I've always thought that there was more empathy for improving diversity in racing, improving inclusivity in racing. I'm afraid to say that yes, there is support for it. Yes, people have contacted me with messages of support for what I've said, but there have also been some messages that have suggested that there is nothing that needs to be changed, that the things I've said are entirely untrue, and people questioning as well how I have felt about certain things that I've experienced in my time, which I find extraordinary since it was I who experienced it and not them. But I thought the temperature of the water was warmer than I found it to be, especially in the last 4 days.
People were also moved to question your motivation for doing the interview in the first place. I sense that is something that has annoyed you quite rightly and hurt you, I would imagine.
Yeah, people have suggested that I've done this for headlines. I'm not going to put you on the spot, Nick, but you have known me for a very long time. We've known each other for a very long time.
You can put me on the spot.
Well, I would like people to, I would like anybody who's known me for the last 20 years to ask the question, does Rishi want to be in the headlines? Does Rishi want to be the center of attention? No, I hate it. I know people might say, but you're on television. I know, but that's because the media is supposed to transfer information from one to another. And I just wanted to be part of that and part of racing. I don't want to be the center of attention. But what I have done is in the interview with Josh Appiafi, I've said how I felt because I want things to be better, not because I want to be a headline maker or I want to jump on bandwagons or I want to attract unwarranted attention to our sport. I want things to be better than I have experienced, not anybody else. I've experienced what I've experienced in the sport, and I'd like things to be better for people coming along. If they're, I've mentioned it to you before, you know, if our children get involved in any industry and encountered the same challenges that we did, and we had an opportunity to do something to make those challenges better for our children, I would feel bad at the end of my time on this earth that I did nothing to help. And I tried to do something by saying how I felt about something, that it may provoke some improvement and progression. But instead, people have been distracted with accusations of the fact that I want to be part of the headlines and I want to jump on a bandwagon and I want to support the Black Lives Matter movement because it's convenient. And it's obviously not the case, because I've explained it time and time again. I think we can be better than we are now. And if you or people out in our sport feel that it's as good as it can be now, then absolutely fine. Stay living in that world. But there are other people. There are other people who've offered me messages of support, and there are other people who see the same vision that I potentially see, who also want things to be better. And I'd like to engage with those people to make things better.
I think also the headlines that were drawn out of your interview don't fully represent the full content of it. So I would urge everybody to go and watch the full interview that Rishi undertook with Josh, which will be available on the At The Races website and available on your Sky Sports planner. And that is because I didn't feel at any point you were saying that you'd had an awful time in racing or that racing had been bad to you in any way. You were simply saying that there were elements within the sport that made you feel uncomfortable given the rest of society, and that it was lagging behind the rest of society in its push for diversity, and that push wasn't strong enough, and also that we could just do a little bit better, well, possibly a lot better, but we could just try and do a bit better. You're not asking people to open their minds even that much.
I would like you to be replicated, or the sentiment of that, what you've just said, to be replicated across the board. Absolutely spot on. That's why you are the broadcaster that you are, Lucky. You've nailed it. Quite simply, it is trying to make things a little bit better. The overall impact of the interview wasn't the fact that Rishi has been downtrodden. The other thing that I've been accused of, apparently, is I've been accused of belittling white trainers, in inverted commas, that have made a success of their careers through hard work. Never in my days have I said anything along those lines. And I respect so many people in our sport for what they've achieved. And I'm grateful to the sport of horse racing for what I have done in my lifetime. I said that in the interview. I said how lucky I was and privileged. And I feel that way all the time about what I do for a living. But it doesn't mean that I haven't experienced awkward situations and things, as you say, that could be a little bit better with a little bit more of an open mind. And I go back to a conversation that you and I had ages ago about trying to get other people to understand themselves a little bit better and why they may feel threatened or angry or fearsome or even resentment at what other people suggest that they may have experienced to perhaps make things a little bit better in the future. And if you can understand why you've reacted that way to any situation, then perhaps it would lead you to a slightly better understanding of why other people react the way they do. So there's a massive amount that needs to improve and be changed. And I hope that despite all the vitriol that I've been on the receiving end of over the last few days for saying how I felt about a few things, I hope that maybe... it was a little bit like drawing poison from a wound, I felt, a wound that's been existing for quite a while. And because I'd suddenly touched it, suddenly the poison has come emerging out. And maybe in the situation that we now have, it might actually get a discussion going and people might be a little bit more honest about their feelings.
Rishi, you've often counseled me over the years to try and steer away from as much negative energy as possible, and I suppose you've had to put yourself in the path of it here by what you've said and the reaction to it. Do you think that reaction is in some way prompted by people feeling threatened and therefore they lash out because it's a sort of threat to the status quo? Do you see where I'm coming from?
I do know exactly what you're trying to get at. The fact is that if we can understand, as I said, with regards to understanding others, if we can understand what the motive is, for genuine motive for what someone is trying to say and trying to achieve, then we can understand that it's not born out of, you know, headline seeking or trying to unsettle the establishment or whatever the wrong sentiment might be. Let's try and understand what people are trying to achieve. We don't have to fear anything, because as you say, by fearing anything, by resenting things, by feeling threatened, the natural reaction that people would have to fear and threat is to either run away or fight back. So some people will either retreat or some people will fight back. And the idea is that it's not a fight. It's not a fight. It's not a threat. It's a question to say, ultimately, are you happy with the way things are? If not, well, listen to the experiences of other people in the industry or in life. Listen to their experiences. Consider whether they have a cogent case for maybe things actually being a little bit better. And then work together. Or if you don't want to work on it and you want to retreat into your world, understandable. I would understand that. People would understand that. But don't feel that I or anybody else with the same sentiment as me is coming to threaten or to unsettle or to try and bring fear about any situation. It's born out of trying to do better. And that's where I've struggled with the calculation in my head this week, is that I did that interview in an attempt to try and get people to understand my experiences and try and get people to understand how I view things and maybe how other people view things. Because I've got lots of people who've said, yes, I agree entirely with what you say. I agree with your sentiment. I've experienced the things that you're talking about as well. So I'm not alone in this. And there are other people who've come up with their support and also incidents of inequality and being subjected to issues of not being included. And so all I'm saying is, let's get into a conversation with those people to make things better. And that could include as many people as would like to be included in that conversation. It doesn't have to in any way threaten anyone and their life.
Rishi, thank you, and more from Rishi later in the show. Well, time now to turn our attention to the racing this weekend at Cheltenham. It's the Paddy Power meeting, and you very rarely hear me get enthusiastic about a cross-country race. But this is a cross-country race with a bit of a difference that's taking place tomorrow, Friday, because it features the rematch between the dual Grand National hero Tiger Roll, so brilliant over these cross-country fences at Cheltenham also, and his conqueror in March, the exciting French six-year-old Easy's Land, who looks as good a horse over these fences as I've seen, and it is really quite a formidable athlete in full cry. But trying to spoil their party and receiving a stone and a half plus from both of them is the Welsh Grand National winner Potter's Corner, who's trained in Wales by Christian Williams, who's with me now. Christian, it's quite some prospect, and I suppose you go in there unencumbered by any pressure.
Yeah, it's just a great race to be involved in. And when we went to school him last week, he schooled well and we were happy, but we didn't really think that Easy Land and Tiger Roll would turn up today with what's going on. But no, it's great, and just not too sure whether the track, whether you need the practice to run in the race once or twice till we can really have a crack at those two. But we'll give it a go anyway, and we'll probably ride him a little bit conservatively, as I said this time. But he's in great form at home, and we're looking forward to him. He's been fairly adaptable in what we've asked of him so far, hurdles, chases, etc. So now we're excited.
Ironically enough, yours was the last place I visited before the country locked down first time in March. We were there when racing was called off for a few months, and you were taking it in your typical laid-back, fairly sanguine fashion. How have the horses done in the meantime?
Yeah, no, everything is obviously, it was worrying times in the beginning, but now we're marching on, and we've got a few winners the last few weeks. Looks like we've got nice horses this year. We tried to look after a few horses last year in their education, a couple of nice, more expensive pointer pointers as we've had before, and they were running over hurdles last year, and they've gone chasing this year. The Future is Bright to be an example of that. He won quite well last Friday at Warwick, and now I'm hoping we got four or five like him, and hopefully they can progress throughout the season, and just try and raise the standard of horse that that we've got. We've had two or three great horses that have flown the flag up until now at Potter's Corner, Limited Reserve, etc. But hopefully we've got more horses now just to take the pressure off those two.
And there won't be anyone, I don't think, who hasn't seen footage of your string exercising on the beach, round the sand dunes, in the water, uphill, down dale, an unusual training regime that seems to work and keep them very happy. Are you hopeful of being able to stay where you are, or do you think at some point you're going to outgrow it?
I'm not sure, to be honest. It's something I sit down with my family, and maybe in the next... this is probably just reined us all in a little bit now, what's going on at the moment, but to sit down with my family in a year or two's time and decide which direction I go in from there. But got two lovely children at home, lovely family, so it's just something we need to sit down. Is, you know, we're obviously young and we want to be competitive and compete on weekends, and to do that you do need a number of horses, but you know, there's a lot to be said for training a large number of horses, and there's obviously pros as well for training a smaller number of horses, so it's not a decision that we rush into. It's just something we sit down in the next year or two and take it from there.
Could that sort of unusual or unorthodox training regime, if you like, could that be a plus when it comes to trying something different like you are this weekend with Potter's Corner? Mentally, would he be a bit more adaptable, do you think?
Yeah, I think he ran disappointing twice when I ran him last year to start with, but I probably didn't have him fit enough last year, and obviously the main name last year was a Welsh National, and I think I'd done a little bit more with him this year, so we'll see. I see Tiger Hall's first run over the fences, he got beat 30-odd lengths, but run a nice race, so we'll just see with Potter's Corner. But I would have thought he'd enjoy the track and keep him interested, and he's obviously a classy horse, and you know, he's got real good solid bumper form, won over hurdles, then he's gone into these long distance staying chases, and he just keeps stepping up to the mark, so I think he could be interesting in the race, you know, maybe not tomorrow, but he could be interesting in the race going forward.
Not to mention, of course, he's the virtual Grand National winner, which was his most famous success to date, or at least his most high profile one.
Yeah, and that was brilliant at the time. Great day in the house of the family, and we really enjoyed that. We tried to not take too many negatives from. We obviously thought we had a great chance in the proper race, but that was such a great day, the virtual national, and it seemed to be a bit of a lift for everyone at the time. There was nothing going on. There was no live sport on telly, and that was a wonderful, wonderful day.
Well, Rishi is still with me, and Rishi, we have got a terrific weekend of action to look forward to at Cheltenham. Will you be there all 3 days?
I'll be there on Saturday. So, yes, I cannot wait to get to Cheltenham on Saturday after the last few days that I've had. In fact, last night at Kempton was a more than welcome distraction just to concentrate on racing for a little bit and get away from what was happening off the track. And obviously the Paddy Power Gold Cup on Saturday is one of my favourite races. And I remember being a kid growing up and watching the likes of David Nicholson with Another Coral, etc., winning, and a race that I've always loved. I think there's potentially in Saint Sonnet a very smart horse. I remember being down at Paul Nicholls earlier in the year before he made his British debut at Catterick, and watching him schooling and being taken by what a handsome individual he was. And of course he won at Catterick, and then he went off to Cheltenham and he took on Sam Crow et al. in the Marsh Novices Chase and came up short. But it was a big ask on just his second run, and he's still only 5 years old. But having had the summer, just watching the way that he was conducting himself and the way that the staff at Ditchit were fawning over him, I suspect that he's held in very high regard, and I cannot wait to see what he can do when he lines up in what looks another competitive renewal of the race.
I think it's a better renewal of the race than it has been for the last few years.
I think it's fair to say, absolutely. You know, if you look down the field with Aso at the top of the weights, and then simply the bets after what he did last season, Al Dance and Nigel Tristan-Davies has obviously been very, very bullish about his chances. Slate House, will he have his day in the big race at Cheltenham? You know, Happy Diva. The list is extraordinary of the talent on show. But what I'd love to see... that this race, you know, in the past, it's been a springboard. If you think back to like Imperial Commander, for example, a springboard for a horse to go on to become one of the star chasers in the game. And I'm hoping that whoever wins it can do that. And Saint Sonnet looks like he's got that potential as such a young horse.
Well, Australia's Hunter Valley in New South Wales, home to some of the most famous studs in the world, let alone in that part of the world, is once again under threat from a significant underground coal mine development, which is being fiercely opposed by Godolphin Coolmore and many others. Tom Magner from Coolmore joins me now. Tom, this has been a very painful experience for you down the years, and it's come to a head again. Just to explain to us what's been happening over the last few weeks.
Well, Nick, the story so far is that for 10 years, Coolmore and Godolphin, who are situated beside us in the valley, we've been fighting the coal mines, you know, that are around the valley. They're very close to Coolmore, but there's one that's directly opposite both our farms, and that's the one that we've been fighting. It's owned by a company called Malabar, and they want to go and do a mine across the road. Obviously, we live in a country that is, you know, it's extreme on weather. We've just come out of what I believe is the worst drought anybody's ever seen. They say it's the worst in living memory. And global warming is obviously playing, you know, it's playing a huge factor all over the world. We're seeing, you know, so many different weather phenomenons and things like that. And, you know, we've had bushfires, and now we've had, as I said, the worst drought in living memory. And water in Australia is key to every farm. Water is the blood flow. It's the life vein of every property in Australia. And these underground mines, or these mines that happen around the valley, they will put our water at risk. You know, we've got good water at Coolmore, and the reason I put down to our success is that everything is due to the water. And the people, they can't say to us that they can't say that our water is not going to be damaged. You know, the planning department have already indicated that there's been significant damage around the valley from water due to coal mining. So, you know, coal mining in the Hunter Valley is a saturating point at the moment. I mean, we're surrounded by coal mines. And to think that, you know, there's another mine going in that's going to put even more stress on an already stressed water supply, you know, it could ruin farms. You know, it's like a band having to go on stage with damaged instruments. It'll be like our water. So, you know, we're fighting this hard. It's our fifth time fighting the mine, we've been told. Four times that, you know, they come up with a body here that the government get to, you know, to come out and say that whether this should or shouldn't happen. And four bodies have come back, four PACs have come back and said, look, that they don't believe that these coal mines should be going ahead across from us. And, you know, here we are again. We're on another one owned by Malabar in the same location. And, you know, Coolmore and Godolphin, we're fighting as hard as we can. You know, with our neighbors, you know, it's not just us that relies on the Hunter River. It's the people of all agriculture, you know, the vignerons, the farmers, the dairy farmers, everybody like that. Water is just so important, and water is at risk.
So do you think that your best chance is to argue on environmental and agricultural grounds rather than on economic grounds, because you've got a huge, great economic juggernaut against you saying that, well, this coal mine is going to inject however many hundred millions into the economy? So are you better off fighting this on an environmental platform?
Yeah, you know, obviously both, but you know, the environment the way it's going at the moment, you know, is obviously very important, but also that the thoroughbred industry has been around for hundreds of years. in the Hunter Valley, you know, and the coal mining industry effectively is a dying game all over the world. And, you know, like, I'm obviously living in Australia and I've got young kids, and I hope that one day they're all horse mad, and I hope that one day that they want to get into the industry, as all our people on the farms have young kids, and we want our kids and their kids to take over for the next generation in these stud farms. But, you know, the coal mines, you know, coal is a dying breed and it won't be around. So we've got to protect it. So, you know, with, you look at the whole world, everybody's, you know, trying to do the right thing by the environment. And I think it should be very seriously considered here in the Hunter Valley.
Tom, thanks for talking to me.
Okay, thanks, Nick.
Tom Magna there from Coolmore, and worth pointing out the quality of bloodstock and of stallion in the Hunter Valley, Godolphin, Coolmore and elsewhere has only increased as Australian racing has grown in prominence through the last decade. You only have to look at the fact that Coolmore are now shuttling the Triple Crown hero Justify to Australia to realise that. So we will keep abreast of that story, as we like to keep abreast of all global horse racing stories here on the Daily Podcast. And next week, it's the turn of Bahrain to take centre stage with the second edition of the Bahrain International Trophy. And the entry has been fantastic this year. A field of 14, including many names you'll be familiar with. Sovereign, the Irish Derby winner, Deirdre, Lord Glitters, Desert Encounter, Dreamcastle, Dark Vision, Global Giant, who's Bahraini owned, and the list goes on. I'm very pleased to say that I'm now joined by Sheikh Salman bin Rashid Al Khalifa, the Executive Director of Rashid Equestrian and Horse Racing Club. Sheikh Salman, how have preparations gone in this unusual year?
Yes, we're all very excited and looking forward for next Friday. Everything is in place and ready to host the race. We're doing everything we can to make sure it's a good experience, good and safe experience for everyone involved. Hopefully it's going to be very exciting for everyone.
It's fair to say you've taken another step forward. £500,000 on offer. You've got an Irish Derby winner in Sovereign, the Globetrotting Deirdre, the Multiple Group 1 winner Lord Glitters, Desert Encounter, Dream Castle, Dark Vision, Global Giant, who I know is owned by Sheikh Issa. He'll be very excited about that, ridden by Frankie Dettori. King Power represented by Bangkok. Does this field really exceed the expectations you had when you opened the entries?
Definitely, I think it exceeded everyone's expectations. Last year, we used to everyone was saying, you know, we're on the calendar and Bahrain is on the map. I can confidently say now, the Bahrain International Trophy is a strong race on the map, and it's a race that all the top trainers from all around the world want to be a part of. I think we've set a very high benchmark. Hopefully we'll just keep working harder to make the race stronger. We have, of course, as you just mentioned, a Sovereign who's a superstar, an Irish Derby winner, finished second to Enable in the King George. Horses like Lord Glitters, Queen Anne winner, Desert Encounter won the Canadian International twice. So we're very, very excited to see these horses run and participate and race in Bahrain.
For those who haven't been to Bahrain and been to the race course there, just tell everybody a little about its history.
Oh, we've been racing for more than 40 years, it's been local racing. For Bahraini owners and trainers, when we hosted our first international race last year, it's the plan to have a strong race, it's a great opportunity, I think, and it falls at a very good time where European trainers can prep their horses at the end of the European training season and participate in different racing jurisdictions. So I think it really works. It works good, and the biggest example would be the entries that we got this year, 61 entries from 46 last year. It just shows you the confidence and it shows you the enthusiasm that these trainers and they just want more options. So I think it's going to be great.
We come off the back of the Breeders' Cup, of course, and then after the December period, we move into some of the better racing in the Middle East with the Dubai Carnival starting and then the Saudi Cup in February. We've talked quite a bit to representatives from Dubai and Saudi Arabia on this podcast, and they've all said they want to forge closer links with one another to sort of strengthen the pattern of racing in the Gulf region during the course of the winter. Do you see yourselves very much as a part of that?
I definitely do, and I think it's definitely happening. It's definitely going to work for the favor of everyone, and I think we'll be touching base soon with Dubai and Saudi. I've been talking to Tom Ryan in Saudi, and he's very enthusiastic and very positive about this. So yeah, I really think it's positive news, and I think it would work fine for everyone. It would be very ideal for more than one racing jurisdiction to sit down and try to put a calendar that would be appealing to attract more people.
Salman, thank you so much for talking to me. Best of luck next week.
Thank you, Nick. And we're very looking forward to welcoming you in a few days in Bahrain.
Looking forward to being there. Well, Rishi's still with me, and Rishi, it's just time for you to send me home with a winner.
I really hope this wins. I could do with some good news. Magical Mile. I don't know if you've seen him in the flesh, but I remember
seeing
him at Sandown on his debut. Remember seeing this horse? He's a very handsome individual, very, very handsome individual, and I get seduced by handsome horses. And I think he's getting better. He's had four runs so far. I think he's getting a bit better. He was much better at Wolverhampton a couple of starts back, and Kempton last time out in the nursery today. Ray Dawson's obviously claiming, and I think he's got a great shot at getting off the mark.
Rich, thanks so much. Thank you for your time. Thank you very much for listening to this podcast. If you do enjoy it, please do tell your friends, give us a rating, review us, and subscribe on your favourite podcast provider. We will be back again tomorrow. That was Thursday, November the 12th. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with FitzDares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.